You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
The Around the NFL podcast. Invented live streaming during the NFL draft.
Welcome to another edition of Around the NFL, the podcast that has everything concerning the 2023 NFL draft covered and doing it in an innovative manner, as you just heard there, the Zoom drop. Dan Hans is here, Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal scattered across Los Angeles, but bringing all the coverage needs here. Hey, boys.
You know, most podcasts, I think, would just like kick back and relax after we broke as many barriers as we did. It's like, I don't know. It's after hitting four home runs in the World Series, we show up the next day and hit another couple. Let's go.
Yeah. I feel like my physical body is still sort of in recovery mode from that live stream. But, you know, we're here. I'm feeling comfortable. Wow. I'm sitting in a chair. What can go wrong?
Yeah, once they got, you know, once I got to the hospital and they got the tubes in me and I got the fluids that were necessary to stay alive after the heat wave that struck that specific studio, I was able to reflect upon what was a very successful Thursday for our podcast. The live stream did really, really good numbers and showed that you guys, the listeners, are interested in that experience when it comes to our show. So that is something we have filed away for future use potentially. And of course, you knew we were going to bring in the podcast goodness as well on Thursday. And now Saturday comes as the draft comes to an end. Seven rounds in the book, roughly 700 more compensatory picks in the books. And now we break down a draft that, Greg, I know you are a big fan. I know you see it as potentially now problematic, but at the same time, it's got some juice to it. It's got your brand connected to it, the trade tsunami. 41 trades by last count connected to this draft, which is a new record. So GMs are more brash than ever when it comes to wheeling and dealing in this exciting time of year.
I like it, but I also don't want to hear anymore in March that's like, oh my gosh, my heavens, I would never give up a fourth round pick for Stephon Gilmore. Like, who would do that? Then we get into the draft and the Patriots are like trading multiple picks to move up to take like a small school kicker and no one gives a shit.
Whoa. We're going to get to that. Why would nobody give? Exactly what I'm talking about.
I'm just saying kickers they don't care about the picks. It's not about the kickers. I just mean, Saints then just they have some guy they want. Like the Lions moved up from the fifth to the third and just gave up all these picks for a guy no one was going to take probably anyways. Just like once they get here, they lose the value of the picks.
It is the strange sporting event inside the NFL calendar, because the mentality seems to completely change, to your point, from the boundaries outside the draft, where it's like the idea of trading draft picks in the inside itself, inside the weekend, becomes this like flurry of activity. Totally bizarre.
I love it.
So we're going to go through, as we do every year, the winners and losers of the 2023 NFL draft. And I was thinking about when I was going through it in my mind, how to best handle it. I feel weird about really getting after draft classes where it's like, oh, that guy was a weird fit there or a weird pick, because it's so, it seems like a fool's errand to try to really guess how these draft classes are going to play. But also you can look at what the needs of a team or how things were handled. I know, Mark, you have something on your plate that you're going to share with us a little bit later about how some teams kind of presented themselves during and after the draft. And so we're going to share some winners and losers. And you are going to share that, right, Mark?
I am planning to, yeah.
Yes. That's a tease in the industry.
My list is mostly winners. Like, I have an article on NFL.com too, and it's, I could have just made it winners of the NFL draft. You like some things better than others, and you kind of jimmy rig some losers in there, but it's just like things you like better than others.
Well said. Exactly. So we'll try to give you both sides of the spectrum. But I think part of the good thing about the draft, and we talked about it with Damashek during the live stream, is that it is an optimistic time of year. So we're gonna dig into it. I can get it going. I'm gonna go with a winner here in a broad sense. The AFC South. I think the AFC South has been a bit of a chore the last couple of years. And we've all had to suffer through some lean years. We've had to suffer through some, you know, not so hot Thursday night football games through the years. And that could be about to change, or at the very least, the division to me has some much needed intrigue now. We already had Trevor Lawrence and a rising operation in Jacksonville, but now we have CJ Stroud and Will Anderson in Houston. And that team seemingly pointing in a new direction, a positive direction. Anthony Richardson bringing his completely unique athleticism to the QB position in Indianapolis. And by the way, Jim Irsay spoke with, I think, Judy Batista, our own Judy Batista. He said, A, they plan to play Anthony Richardson this year, start Anthony Richardson this year. And Irsay, because he's Jim Irsay, also said, hey, we would have taken him if we had the number one overall pick. And he also said, and this is the sliding doors. Yeah, Jim Irsay likes to talk. The sliding doors of the NFL draft, that if Richardson was taken before they were on the board, they might have taken Will Levis, who went later. Speaking of Will Levis, even the Titans, there's some juice with the Titans, who trade up in the second round for Will Levis. And now he's now positioned as the heir apparent at QB with a chip on his shoulder the size of Nashville after that first round free fall. So I'm not saying like all of a sudden we're going to have AFC South dominating their conference, but there's a little juice there now. And hey, that's overdue.
I'm with you. I mean, I think, you know, it was a year ago we were talking about the AFC West as this newly formed division with, you had Patrick Mahomes, but Russell Wilson, who we did not think was going to fall off a human cliff the way he did. And it was like
a human cliff.
We cannot watch we cannot wait to watch these AFC West games all season long. And it didn't pan out. So I guess I come out of any draft weekend with a fair amount of cynicism that half of this won't work out. But that said, like, the tone of the AFC South and the hope around it, and the fact that we're not going to know right away that for the next couple of years, like, these young quarterbacks going up against each other will become one of the more intriguing flip-flops in all of the NFL, because the AFC South has been largely unwatchable, at least portions of it, for big chunks of the time that we've been doing this podcast. And you've suddenly plopped like three super intriguing young quarterbacks into the mix on teams that are growing before our eyes. And the fourth is Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars, who, depending on how things go, could be a genuine AFC title game threat. So I'm with you on this.
Right. I'm totally selfish in that. There's no way that these moves don't make them more interesting. And that's all I really care about. They're going to make them more watchable. The Colts are going to be extremely watchable, I believe, with Anthony Richardson. The Texans at least have a vision, a direction. They've just kind of been wasting time for 2 years, and they're going to make these 10 a.m. games more watchable. It's funny that these teams, you know, add some juice at the moment that they've taken away the requirements that you have to have a primetime game now, because they're still probably not getting many primetime games yet. They're going to, you know, the networks are going to wait. Amazon's one are going to wait to see if they actually start winning games. Jacksonville will be in primetime. I don't know if Anthony Richardson and Stroud will much, but it'll be good picks for us in our preview drafts. And what they did over the weekend too made me more excited. Houston, you know, there were all these little receivers that were available in this draft. Josh Downs, went to the Colts. He reminds me so much of Hunter Renfrow. And now you kind of think of like a little jitterbug over the middle getting open. And then what Richardson does well, which is, I think, throw the ball deep to the outside. And he's got Alec Pierce and he's got Pittman on the outside. And it's like, okay, you're putting something together here with a running game that has Jonathan Taylor. That's going to be tough to stop. And then you look at the Texans, who are expecting to get John Mechie back, their second round pick from a year ago, who had that battle with cancer. But he is expected to play, and they took Tank Dell, who was my favorite of all those small receivers. The man with the chutzpah to be like 5'7 and call himself Tank, who a lot of people thought the 40 time that people just missed on that because he just plays so fast. And so both of these teams kind of added fun pieces during the draft too, along with the quarterbacks, and they're just going to be more fun that there's like a point to them this year.
Yeah, is there a team that's a bigger wild card, at least on the offensive side of the ball, than Indianapolis now? And I think that's, if you're a Colts fan, you're really excited because you've went through this post-Andrew Luck era. We don't need to go through the quarterbacks again, but they went through veteran after veteran after veteran, bottoming out with Matt Ryan, who didn't have much left. And now you go to the what's the opposite of Matt Ryan, like 2022 Matt Ryan? It's right. Richardson and what he brings. And I want to see Jonathan Taylor. Let's not forget what Jonathan Taylor did in 2021 when he had a Jamal Charles in his prime type season, just a dominant player before his ankle got jacked up and he was not the same player all season. Think about that offensive line that was seen as like this, like, absolute stone cold lock is one of the better lines in football. And then they had injuries and strange ineffectiveness with some suspect coaching. What if that comes back together? You know, if Richardson hits the ground running, watch out. This team could really, really shock people in the AFC this season. And I know the conference is loaded, but could one of these teams hit the ground running as a young team? Absolutely. So AFC South, you got some juice.
Yeah, I'd also say just it's not a knock on Frank Reich, but we like the match of Shane Steichen with Anthony Richardson. And the Texans, to me, who have gone through a complete chaos with coaches over the past 2 years. Like, I think DeMeco Ryans is going to be someone that, like, a season from now, we look and say, like, he completely gave the Texans like a different kind of vibe and identity. And so there's more, like, there's some coaching intrigue as well, where, I mean, before it was hard to take the Texans seriously no matter what they were doing, because they've been wandering through a total abyss for the past three seasons.
But they think they're going to be good, and they sort of have to be good with that trade they made for Will Anderson. It's a little bit of a subplot. Cardinals fans can enjoy this year rooting against the Texans. It's always fun when you have a first round pick of another team. The fact that they gave up that first round pick for Anderson, that could be, you know, based on their previous history, a top five pick, a top three pick. So I think they believe that they're going to be better than most people think, or else they would not give up that pick plus a second round pick this year. Top of the second, like the very first pick, essentially the second and a third round pick. The more time I've had to think about that trade, I think it was kind of insane. And Will Anderson almost has to be a Hall of Fame player to make it worth it. But they believe in it. And if he is that type of player, no one's going to honk.
But then that's what I'm talking about with I don't like winners and losers exercises with the draft, when we just don't know yet, because Will Anderson could be an absolute dominant player, and then it makes all the sense in the world. We need to see him play. My one last point before we move on to the next winner regarding the Colts. One other thing that's like, keep an eye on this. Jim Irsay had a pretty wild season as team owner last year. And after years of, you know, you're not necessarily connecting him to the way his dad handled running a football team, it was Jeff Saturday was the head coach last year. And it's like, how involved is he going to be now with this young, explosive, completely unpredictable entity at quarterback with Gardner Minshew, a respected veteran behind him? How much of his hands will be in the mix with a rookie head coach? The Colts are interesting to me on multiple levels. I'll leave it there.
I mean, Irsay seems to bubble up the most when the team is struggling, because you could look at most of Frank Reich's tenure and say that Irsay wasn't like a meddling nightmare on a week-to-week basis. I mean, things got real crazy and he took control of his property essentially. But if things are working and if Anthony Richardson's working out, I think he goes back to delightful little tweets and strange tweets and maybe not too much more, hopefully.
That's the hope for Colts fans. The other one, the other reality is that he's just going all in. He's doing the George Steinbrenner in 1985 move.
I mean, the Levis tweet he sent out before round two was one of the most insane things I've ever seen, that he sent a tweet out to all the fans. Should we draft Will Levis tonight? You know, the day of round two. And I don't know if he was trying to mess with, like, I don't know what he was doing. Probably nothing important. But while we're in the AFC South, we should mention
I think he
that
crossed
Levis
the Rubicon, thing. Greg. I'm wondering if that's what happened last year.
What was that? Maybe he was trying to
I want it to happen.
I'm not sure.
Right. Maybe the Titans. He didn't want the Titans to take Levis. And the Titans did. And the Titans traded up for him. Like, I think that made sense that for where the Titans got Levis and where they are. And I called Levis a similar prospect to Ryan Tannehill. It does make you just curious to watch. They're a team we'll talk about plenty in August because of Levis's presence there, and because they took Tajay Spears, like the next running back to replace Derrick Henry. Like, those two guys still feel a little precarious, or at the very least, like the last year they'll be in Tennessee.
There he is. What's up, Justin?
We'll also talk about them a lot because of me, right?
Well,
it's an accident
because of you and that rotating Titans helmet with your remote setup, which I cannot get enough of. I just love it, Justin.
Thanks.
How do you feel, by the way? How do you feel big picture right now about the Titans?
I feel like if Will Levis is a franchise quarterback, it's a home run draft and nothing else matters. If Will Levis sucks, the fact that they came out of this draft without addressing wide receiver until their very last pick and without addressing cornerback when you have guys who've been injured a lot and, like, you know, unknown future contracts, Christian Fulton in the last year of his deal, Caleb Farley never been able to really stay healthy or play well. I think it's a weird draft for the Titans. Maybe they, you know, went with his best player available thing. Tajay Spears, by the way, has like a crazy medical issue where apparently he doesn't have an ACL in one of his knees or something like that. So
overrated. Tulane guys don't need ACLs.
Yeah, that won't be a problem.
Hopefully, I hope it works out. Like, I think they got guys that can be contributors, you know, even in year one. I would say start Will Levis now. Trade Ryan Tannehill at some point for a pick next year, because if you don't know that Will Levis is your guy going into next year's draft when you have two expected really great quarterbacks and Caleb Williams and Drake May and other guys that could pop up at some point, you can't go into next year's draft like so committed to Will Levis because you don't know what he is yet that you pass on potentially your actual franchise quarterback. So that's
right,
where I'm at.
Let's stick a pin in the Titans talk because we're going to get back to them a little bit later. Mark, do you want to throw out a winner?
I will. This, to me, came into full view during day two of the draft. And, you know, historically, this is not a team that I've wanted to see thrive, but you just have to give in at some point. He's going to do it because it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, they kind of did also. If they had been listening to me, which no front office should be spending a second doing, but I found that the two players that I kind of talked about a bunch before this draft, one of them was Joey Porter Jr. When I was like, you know, I've already been down this road. Just if you're the Steelers, historically, go get the son of a great former Steeler and just swing for the fences and see if it works. I think it addressed a need, but also Joey Porter fell to them appropriately. They made the right choice. They went and got him. I loved them going and taking Broderick Jones in the first round, a need again, but they went and got a tackle I think that the New York Jets probably wanted right after him. And that's that line, which has been a problem for a couple of years, starts to become something that you can rely on. I thought they improved down the stretch over the course of last year. That whole offense is growing together. And then you add to the mix one of the most fascinating players in the draft to me from a physical traits perspective is Darnell Washington, 6'7". I think it might take him a little bit of time to get going from a production standpoint. Danny's not probably going to fulfill the quest that you put out there for a tight end to come on and just set the world on fire. But can you imagine being like a smaller cornerback trying to take down 6'7" Darnell Washington in space on a pass from Kenny Pickett? I just kind of like, compared to where we were 13 months ago before last year's draft, where the Steelers offense post Big Ben seemed like it was a fading old school mess, has gotten a lot younger all over the place. I think there's a lot to like about the fact that they're growing together. You've added a new offensive tackle and a really freaky tight end that I cannot wait to watch. And Damashek came on our show, during the live stream, and he talked about the Steelers as an 11-win team. That is a tall order in a super top-heavy AFC. But Mike Tomlin goes and wins 7, 8, or 9 games when you're in a so-called rebuild. I don't think 11 wins with the way that Omar Khan has just stepped right in at GM and paved the road for the Steelers. It's not out of control. It's not an out-of-control prediction. With how as unpredictable as every season is, the Steelers always, to me, are a team that could be double-digit win. And right now, I like where they're going.
They were that team that like kept taking the guy that was the highest on like the consensus boards, like Daniel Jeremiah's board, for instance. Even in the fourth round when they took Nick Herbig, whose brother is on the team. They're so into brothers. It's a little too much. I think they signed Nate Herbig. They got Nate and Nick now.
Calm down a little bit. Yeah.
Calm down with the brothers. Calm down with the sons. Although it was worth, you're right, taking Joey Porter just for the picture of Joey Porter Sr. holding Joey Porter on the field at the Super Bowl when they won. Like that alone, it's worth it.
I mean, they were going to use that photo no matter where he went. Still would have been a cool, but it's even cooler. Yeah.
Why? They wouldn't have. Why would they?
They wouldn't have used it. Yeah, father and son, you know, legacy. I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't have.
They had it locked and loaded in the truck. Of course they're going to use it.
Like they went and got Pickett last year in a weird quarterback draft. And if you're not going to have a, like, ultra talented freak of a quarterback, you build up the group around him, and that's a good looking group right now. I mean, you have Darnell Washington as your wide receiver two, as your tight end two now, and I'm not really counting on anything but from Allen Robinson, but they're good enough at wide receiver even without Allen Robinson doing much. That's a fun team.
Yeah, and we talked about the idea of their running game finally getting some teeth to it with improved line play, and you know, don't forget Pat Freiermuth, who was a just outside the top five amongst all tight ends last year in receptions and receiving yards, playing with a rookie quarterback. So, yeah, I think Washington, who, again, 6'7", 264, he's basically built like Aaron Judge, is going to go out there. And even if he's not immediately an offensive terror, who knows if he ever develops into that. He seems like somebody who could kick some ass in the blocking game at the very least in some two tight end sets. So, yeah, late in the third round, I feel like when you get late in the third round, fourth round, fifth round, start throwing the darts at like guys that could be freaky. There you go. It's a good pick. I agree. The Pittsburgh Steelers got a lot of positive pop, and I know Sheck was very excited about it, but Sheck was going to be excited no matter what. Let's face it. Winner, Greg?
I'll throw out a winner. Let's go Jordan Love. Let's go Mark Sessler, too. You know, the Packers and Goody making Mark Sessler sandwiches, making Jordan Love happy. I don't think they're really making Aaron Rodgers upset by taking a bunch of second and third round like tight ends and receivers. But if that's a small bonus, something tells me Rodgers isn't too plugged into like day two of the Packers draft. But Luke Musgrave in the second round, pass catching tight end, who I didn't love just because he looks so upright, like, how could he not get hurt? And he spent a lot of his college getting hurt. But smarter people than me, like Lance Zierlein, like thought, you know, he's as explosive, and DJ liked him too, as any tight end in the draft. You took a receiver, Jaden Reed, also in the second round. And then they took Tucker Kraft. So they just like went three straight receivers. Tucker Kraft's a tight end as well. But he was a guy from South Dakota State who I did get a chance to watch it. Like Greg Cosell could not stop gushing about as a Dallas Goedert type of clone. So they're building their team in a certain way. I think it was interesting that they doubled up at tight end specifically. I think they're going to be a run based team with a lot of AJ Dillon, a lot of two tight end sets, a lot of Aaron Jones. And I just like that. Yes, you took Lucas Van Ness, which was such a Packers pick in the first round, but you didn't overlook Love. And then you knew Sessler had sandwiches on the line, so you took another receiver in the fifth round. Dontavian Wicks, that's the man.
That's why I didn't take the pick, because it was Nebulos.
Oh, wait, and another one.
It was somebody coming late in the round.
256, round 7, pick 39. I missed that one, too. Charlotte's own Grant Dubose. So they went way over 4. And, yeah, you're bound to hit one.
It's Nebulos.
I can only imagine that these sandwich props that we boil up are massive talking points inside various team buildings and probably triggering thought processes. So I'm with you that they were listening to that. But I think about like Matt LaFleur, who for his entire run in Green Bay, and it's been successful outside of January. I mean, you kind of were held hostage to do exactly what Aaron Rodgers wanted to do on offense, right? The big part of it was like, Aaron Rodgers is going to freestyle a little bit, but in general, the offense has to be something that he's happy with, that's catered around him outside of not drafting picks for him. So they went and got a bunch of new guys around Love, which, I mean, A, just makes sense. They needed help at these positions. It wasn't like a vanity project necessarily, but they went and did it. But I think that with the two tight ends and what they could do, like maybe LaFleur has a chance to put a little bit more of a personal stamp on altering what they do around a different type of quarterback. So for me, the Packers have sort of been the same thing since like 2010. And even before that, for 1,000 years with Brett Favre, I'm not sure they'll be better. I'm just weirdly more intrigued by them than I ever have been before. And I like the idea of a completely fresh start.
And stick a pin in that thought, because coming up later this week or next week, we'll do our around the AFC and NFC in 48 minutes. And we'll kind of dig into the postmortem of the draft and looking ahead of what things mean for these teams. All right, we got more winners to get to, a couple losers to get to, but first a break.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't me.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
All right, we're back. All right, Greggy, how about a winner?
All right, let's go Lions. They had a weird Thursday. Let's just be real. I heard some speculation from a couple places that they were a little bit like the fantasy draft, you know, manager at pick six that spun out because they totally expected the whole time to take Devin Witherspoon. No one thought the Seahawks were taking Devin Witherspoon. It just felt like a chalk pick. And then suddenly you're trading out, not getting good value at all from going 6-12 if you look to the trade chart, and you take Jahmyr Gibbs there. I like the Jack Campbell pick fine. He definitely fits a need, maybe has a higher ceiling. But after day one, and this is what happens when you're Brad Holmes and you just stack all these picks, you're going to end up looking good. I mean, they had six picks in the first three rounds, and the next four to me were really intriguing. Brian Branch, who they traded up to get ahead of the Patriots. Maybe the Patriots were taking Brian Branch. He just felt like a Patriots player, like Nick Saban's Binky, just can do everything. Kind of a Chauncey Gardner-Johnson type, and they have Chauncey Gardner-Johnson already there. But, man, that secondary is versatile. He's going to be smart. He's going to be there forever. They took my favorite tight end in the draft in terms of, like, a value in Sam Laporta, but I don't even know if it's a value anymore because they took him over Michael Mayer, which is kind of wild. But, man, Laporta is athletic, and it's too easy to compare him to Kittle because he's from Iowa, but I just think he's going to be a big playmaker. And then you wait for Hendon Hooker until the third round. And at that point, like, that to me was the perfect spot to do it. I know it's crazy. He's only 3 years younger than Jared Goff, who's been in the league for 8 years and has started 100 games. But I still like the idea of having a young quarterback to develop. But when you take him in the third round, it's like not as much pressure that he's got to play anytime soon. If he just turns into a backup, who cares? That's fine. You just spend a third round pick on it. So I kind of like what the Lions did. If you add up all the three rounds and put it together, I mean, these are guys who are going to play for them. So there's still a team, because Holmes set this up so well with all these picks, that got a lot better with six picks in the first three rounds. I kind of like that he's doing things differently. He's not worried about the draft cognoscenti.
I think it's like really easy for especially those of us that you jump onto the draft process a little bit later, and we're valuing positional need and positions in general over the players sometimes. And like that I think that contributed to their Thursday night looking a little wonky. And maybe it was, but also, and you know, this is where Hard Knocks helps a little bit. Like one of my big takeaways coming out of Hard Knocks was like, wait a minute, this coaching staff is for the first time in that I can remember in Lions history is forward thinking. They've shown they can develop players really well. So I thought what they did over day two and day three really just galvanized a roster that's already like a playoff level roster. And the one little thing is like Hendon Hooker got a lot less of attention because of the injury. He's a little bit older, but if that pick worked out and they fell in love with him and he replaced Jared Goff and did that kind of seamlessly a season from now, this draft looks incredible, because if you suddenly hit on a later round quarterback, you look absolutely genius.
I don't know, Greg, about Lions running it back as team around the NFL, but they remain highly juicy. A lot of heat around Detroit.
I would do it, and it's despite being public number enemy number one on Twitter today, because I sent some tweet about their backfield and Lions Twitter was not happy. I was basically like, I said Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, you know, because we'll get to the DeAndre Swift trade, right? I guess we can mention it now. They traded DeAndre Swift for
Will get to it in one moment.
Later, but for not much. And I just said like, Gibbs and Montgomery isn't that much better than Jamal Williams and Swift. I think that's like they're probably better. And if Gibbs turns into a huge hit, then they're a lot better. But I'm just assuming some picks work, some picks don't. I'm not a big David Montgomery fan. That was one of my least favorite signings of the offseason. To me, that's a wash with Jamal Williams. And it's just like you spent a lot of resources to kind of upgrade your backfield when you were really productive as a running team anyway. So that was it. But I am getting severely ratioed to high heaven. Someone texted me about it and I wasn't aware, and it's something.
That is, I think there's also sometimes when those things happen, the fan base knows it too, and they're just defensive about it because they just want it to be. And Gibbs, like kind of the point you guys were making about Bijan with Atlanta on Thursday night, I think for that to make sense, like Gibbs has to be a monster. Like he has to be a stud, and David Montgomery has to be healthy and work in a really nice complimentary way. But I think it really goes back to, if you're going to use that, everybody could talk about, oh, finally running backs getting respect in the first round. Sure, but he can't be good. He has to be great, or you should have focused, I think, on using getting your roster better in other places. And that's a neat seg to one of my losers. We mentioned quickly there that they did make the move, sending the talented injury prone running back DeAndre Swift to the Eagles for a fourth round pick, I believe it was.
In 2025. Two years out. Yeah.
And, you know, that in addition to their big Thursday night where they brought in two defenders who are highly valued, Nolan Smith and Jalen Carter, bringing those two gentlemen in and including all these other Georgia players that are entering the fray over the last 2 years. Here's Peter Schrager late in the telecast on Saturday about something he heard regarding embittered general managers across the landscape.
Oh, I love this.
I talked to all the GMs around the league. There is a little bit of like a, all right, guys, everyone, you, ESPN, enough with the Howie Roseman,
are you
the
serious?
Girl. There's a little bit of that, too, that this is like a media just showering. Oh, the Eagles. They didn't win the Super Bowl. There's other teams in the NFC. You know, like there is a competitive nature amongst these other teams that this Eagles squad has been getting a lot of love.
I would.
Howie, mother.
And, you know, I'll give Daniel Jeremiah, who, you know, I got to give him. The whole crew on NFL Network did great, including Jeremiah throughout the weekend. And Daniel, 42 of his 50, top 50 on his big board, 42 came off the board in the first 50 picks, which I really think I hate saying this, guys, but Jeremiah has become such a titan in this industry that I really think he's now able to kind of affect things on some level because GMs and front offices care about what Daniel Jeremiah thinks. But he quickly responded to Schrager's reporting there or the conversations he had by saying, well, how about this? And we know, by the way, DJ has Eagles ties as well. So he was going to be a little jumpy on it. But still, he says, I want to hear, go to those GMs that you talk to and look at the Eagles roster and then look at that GM's roster and ask them if they would trade if they could and then see how the conversation ends after that. I just got to, it is a little the waterfall of celebration of Rosen, but he kind of earns it. And I think what he was able to do with Carter and Smith day one, and then the DeAndre Swift trade is the exact type of move that you want your GM to make. And he does that all the time. I feel like he makes those common sense moves to bring in players that have a lot of upside at a good cost. And here's an example of why he is so good. He gives up that fourth round pick. And if DeAndre Swift, when his contract runs up, leaves the team next year, they could get a fourth round compensatory pick back. So it becomes him essentially taking on DeAndre Swift, who is absolutely a monster when healthy and in the right offense. And he's not even giving up anything. And don't get mad because your GM doesn't think to do the same thing.
I totally agree. And it's like it was a year ago that without a lot of pre-whispering around this, he pulls off the A.J. Brown trade that completely changes the development of Jalen Hurts, changes another their offense example entirely. And it's like, okay, so Roseman is doing it year after year. There's a consistency to their front office. And they went through a post-Doug Peterson rebuild that took, what, 14 days? I mean, there was no dark ages for them. They turned around, changed who they were, developed a quarterback, and did it very quickly. So I do think that in general, it reminds me when we were at the Combine a couple years ago, and that like coaches' hotness rankings list came out, and you had a bunch of coaches grumbling about it because certain guys always get ranked high on that kind of a list by the subjective eye of many thinking this guy's hot or not. And like there's people just grumbling. It's kind of the same thing. Like they do listen to this. I think the one thing you kind of just start to hear is like these guys read, listen to everything, follow Twitter. They know the temperature out there. And there probably is sort of a consensus that Howie Roseman's a little over-celebrated, but no one logically could break it down and say he isn't being celebrated for the right reasons, because he is. Because I think a year ago, like Les Snead was like, this guy's changing the way the NFL works and people are going to start to do things like the Rams. Then the Rams fall off a cliff. Who's talking about, I mean, Les Snead is still a very talented general manager, but he's not the chic guy to discuss right now. It is Howie Roseman. And so if people are talking about you, that's the best thing. That's the best indicator that you're succeeding and damaging their goals.
Right, the best they could come up with, oh, he didn't win the Super Bowl. Sorry, like they scored 35 points and a holding call prevented them from going after it one more drive. I think I've always gotten the sense, I mean, people in the NFL don't love Howie Roseman because he's a short, non-ex player, different background from a lot of front offices, and he's been killing it. And so there's a lot of football guys that
just
want...
Did you say short?
I was going to go with his background in general is just different. Let's just say that is that, you know, all that is different than a lot of the people running teams. And there's a lot of football guys who kind of see that, and they see the analytics department there too, as a threat. And they kept the Georgia thing going. Kelly Ringo, their fourth round pick at cornerback is a, if you go and look at like the preseason, like who's going to get taken in the top 20 picks, top 10 picks, he was all over that, and he fell in the draft for various reasons, but it's like they take another Georgia guy who with a lot of talent, at least, that was kind of a boomer bust guy, and they get him late. They got value everywhere.
Listen to this Georgia tidbit. A little over 9% of the Eagles roster this year will be players drafted from Georgia in the last 2 years. 5 out of 53. And by the way, that is funny and a little weird, but also like they like that program. That's a successful program. They see it as a football factory that they trust. And again, it's kind of like, not to dumb it down or flatten it, but it's like they have a process. He has a process. And sometimes you wish like your general manager would think this way as well. Like, how do I make my team better? Oh, use the college program that pumps out consistently star defensive players. Oh, DeAndre Swift, he could be had at a very cheap price, and he could be an upgrade over Miles Sanders. Like, yeah, oh my God, you're right. Like, I'll bring him in. I'll take him in. Oh, if I do this the right way, I could even actually kind of get him for free, and I'm only paying him like $1.77 million this season. It's like awesome. So
it's definitely a nightmare for fantasy. Just stay away there. You know, Rashad Penny, Kenneth Gainwell, and DeAndre Swift. Like, I get it, Lions fans. DeAndre Swift will frustrate you going for the big play, and he's going to get hurt a lot. And he's an inconsistent player, but his numbers speak for themselves. He's very effective per touch. But between him, Gainwell, and Penny, it's like they'll all get hurt, but they'll all take turns being good.
People sometimes sleep on Howies, too, just in general. And I know some Howies. And I know Howies on both ends of the spectrum, like wildly impressive Howies, and some Howies are like very much like, oh, well, I don't know about that Howie.
He's a real variance.
He's on the positive end, yeah. High variance, yeah. But he's one of the good Howies. Is that what you're referring to?
No.
I didn't think so. All right, go on. How about you, Mark? What do you got? Winner, loser? Throw it out there.
Here's a team that I've been real tough on for the last year, the Cleveland Browns. And I think that this is a team that like basically had no draft capital, obviously because of Deshaun Watson. And that's the big question mark hanging out there. Like, what version of that player do you get this season after selling your soul for this quarterback? But one of the reasons they didn't have an extra pick this time around was because they went and got Elijah Moore. There is some projection here, but if Elijah Moore works out alongside Amari Cooper and Donovan Peoples-Jones, I liked what they did after reading about this pick more and more. That gets Cedric Tillman, the wide receiver out of Tennessee, is one of the bigger guys in the draft, sort of an archetypal X guy who I think fits with Amari Cooper and fits in that. It's suddenly that was a weakness last year. The wide receiver group was a weakness. They also were a team that were real soft up the middle of their defense. And they brought in Jim Schwartz as their coordinator, which I like the coordinator switch in general. That was a problem all last year, but they were getting run on. Easy. I mean, there just was nothing in the middle. And they went and got Dalvin Tomlinson in free agency, but then drafted this guy, Siaki Ika, who is absolutely massive. He is like a 335-pound front door. Now, I don't know what else he's going to do for you in general, but it's kind of like described as a guy that makes things easier for other people around him. And so this guy, along with Tomlinson, gives you, that's sort of what Jim Schwartz wants in the middle of his defense. So I like that. And then they went and got DeJuan Jones, the offensive tackle, because Jedrick Wills, I think it's a real question mark at left tackle. That did not work out post Joe Thomas the way that they've wanted. And I think this is a big season for him. And DeJuan Jones down at a number 111 is, we'll see if he can play. But if he did and you got an offensive tackle right there, it's another potential need. And so without a lot of draft capital, I thought Andrew Berry, after a kind of a rough year, put together a good draft with what their resources were.
I had them down as a winner too. Totally agree. Partly because I'm just I did my wide receiver rankings on Twitter, really making people talk, making people think. And Cedric Tillman was very high on that list. I loved his tape. He just looks like a guy who I'd rather have than all these little receivers that were taken in this draft that I think can be productive. I had him as the fourth receiver. And I kind of like that they took Dorian Thompson-Robinson, too, at pretty much the consensus QB6 in this draft, who has a lot of good tape out there. Fifth round, you maybe get a backup quarterback. Who knows? You know, Deshaun. Well, I guess you're stuck with Deshaun Watson forever.
Deshaun Watson was on Twitter Spaces. He did an interview this weekend, it appears. And he had the quote, "You can't define my career off of six games." And went on to talk about how he sees the Browns as a team that could sneak up and surprise a lot of people the way the Eagles did last year. We shall see. But yeah, there's a lot. Amari Cooper had obviously a big year. Yeah.
He also, at one point, I don't know if it was on the Spaces Q&A, but at one point over the last 3 or 4 days, talked about the fact that Elijah Moore had escaped a toxic culture in New York. It's like, who are we? Like, can we maybe chill out on describing cultures and teams right now, Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, I'll let his comments stand on their own on that.
I'll leave that there. They did get better without a ton of, like, easy resources, I think. DeJuan Jones is a freak of nature too. How big how big that dude is. So you, it's a fair, it's a good enough point by Watson that you, you can't judge. Like, I've been killing him based on those six games. Those six games were so much worse than any six games he had ever played ever, like in college or in the pros as a six game sample, that I think it's truly concerning. But it's also fair to point out, like, you can't judge his entire career off of that. And we'll see. I think they've set him up to succeed.
Mark, do you have another one?
I have a loser for now, because, okay, you know, I think there was some buzz around DeAndre Hopkins leaving a terrible situation in Arizona. I think it can still happen, but kind of every time Rap Sheet talks about it, it's like, it's not about to happen. There's nothing really on the horizon. I thought there was a world where he became like a Patriots wide receiver this weekend or somewhere else, and it's not come to fruition. And right now, if you're DeAndre Hopkins or you're anyone on that offense, your career is just put on hold. You don't have Kyler Murray. I don't love that team in general. I think it's probably the worst roster in the league. And you've got a truly star wideout that someone's going to want at some point, but he's tough to trade, and he's tough to trade for even the Cardinals. We talked about this because they don't get a lot for it. I know they probably want to move on from him just for the sake of it, but they're stuck paying so much of his salary that I think it maybe wasn't as easy a trade to finesse this weekend. And so he's sort of stuck in absentia, wondering what will happen with his 2023 season.
I think veteran trades in general was like a loser, you know,
right?
Hopkins, Dalvin Cook, Za'Darius Smith, Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, like all these guys you thought maybe could go. Not much really happened. Like, the Swift move came up during the draft and then happened quickly. Some of those guys, I think maybe one of the Broncos receivers and maybe Hopkins could make sense in August. The others I'm not sure about. I think most of those guys will probably just stay. But at this point, yeah, I don't think Hopkins or a guy like that's going to get moved. That said, I think the Cardinals were winners, weren't they? They loaded up on picks for 20. Like, they did a nice job moving around the board where they sort of won each one of those trades. And they have two first-round picks, including the Texans next year, two third-round picks. Like, they loaded up for next year. I think they did a good job without really losing any picks this year.
Still makes sense to trade Hopkins, I would think, though.
Yeah, I think
I don't know if it's because of his market. Sometimes we see a veteran and we assume he has a market, and then it turns out he doesn't. Is that really the case? Like, is this going to end with Howie Roseman trading for DeAndre Hopkins and giving up a fifth round pick? You know what I mean? Like, there just has to be value. And I know they came out even strong on last Thursday and on Thursday night and said, you know, he wasn't going anywhere. But I don't know. Maybe I still think another shoe could drop there.
Well, I think also once we get players back on the field and a couple injuries hit here and there, a lot of the veterans that Greg mentioned might become more feasible to move. Greg, I would agree with you that I think that if you're the Cardinals or you're a Cardinals fan, you got to put this year on hold and look at it through a different lens. And at least they load it up for next year. And this is a tank season. They're not going to call it that. We're not allowed to say that. But there's a chance Kyler Murray doesn't even play this year if they don't want. What's the worth of playing him? If he's coming off this injury. So it's like, it could be a complete mail-in job, but then you've loaded up for next offseason.
Yeah, there's something, PFF Moo, Timo Risk on Twitter, you know, posted this chart of trade value gained in the draft, and the Cardinals actually even passed the Bears in terms of how much surplus, like, money and value that they picked up, even though the Bears traded down from one. And those two teams were, let's see, about 3.5 times more than any other team in the league. So they just they got a ton of resources, and they didn't do it by like getting rid of this draft either. They filled needs and took some good players in this draft too. So I like that. They are setting up for the tank, and that Texans pick, man, I mean, they're going to be rooting against the Texans and hoping like that's a top five pick too next year.
There's always one trade or two trades that you go into the ensuing season, like, keep an eye on that and what that can do to the draft board. That is certainly the case. There you go, Cardinals fans. I know it's been there's some negativity or critical discussion of your team on the show in recent weeks and months, but nice weekend. There we go. The sun will come out. Maybe not tomorrow. Sun will come out in like 2 years, something like that. It's all right. All right, let's take a break and we'll keep going.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Welcome back. Yeah, you know we got to go to the Kicker Club. We got to go. You know why? Everybody's talking about the running backs getting some respect this year. How about two kickers going in the first 112 picks of this draft, including a kicker going top 100? Both my boys. Chad Ryland. The Patriots traded up to get Chad Ryland, moving up 8 spots in round 4 to take the Maryland stud.
With the Jets. How do you feel about that? That the Jets
feel
traded
great
with the Patriots.
My love of and support of the kickers and how important they are in our league supersedes anything, including my own family.
Wow.
And then Michigan's Jake Moody, who was absolutely nailed for the Wolverines. He gets picked by the Niners, you know, an operation that everyone respects, in the 3rd round. And it's like, when is the last time that happened? Well, I'll tell you what, it is the highest a kicker has gone in the draft since, we don't like to bring this name up. It's like, you know, I'm reading the Harry Potter books with the boys. I've told you, I'm in book 2 now. And the main baddie, the antagonist early in the books, and I'm blanking on his name, but he's also known as
Voldemort.
Voldemort. He's known as the one who shall not be named. We do not like to bring up Roberto Aguayo's name around here. He is the one who shall not be named, the 2nd round pick of the Bucks, who was cut after 1 season. But that's the territory we're in, that the Niners, and it's usually a team that really is satisfied with their roster. And if we're gonna get on the Lions a little bit and be like, hey, or even the Falcons, you had a good running back. Why'd you add a running back? Robbie Gould is a great kicker. He's old, but a great kicker. But they bring in this kid, Moody. And here's the phone call from Kyle Shanahan, Niners coach, to Jake Moody when they made him the 99th overall pick, courtesy of the Niners.
Jake, congrats, man.
Thank you very much.
Hey, man, you got to know how high we think of you, man. We didn't take a running back. We spent a 3rd round pick on a kicker. So that shows you how we feel about you, dude.
Let's go.
Two funny things there. That's obviously the Niners, like a little wink to people who it's a bit of a trope that the Niners just love taking those running backs every year. And I just thought it was funny because my son, Jack, does it, and all his second grade buddies do it. Like, whether you're a boy or a competitive athlete in America now and beyond, you just say let's go all the time. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go. Yeah,
I hear that from my kids. Score like a goal. Nonstop. Absolutely.
Let's go. Meg someone. You know, kick one through the legs. Let's go. You're watching YouTube. You find a video. You're like, let's go.
Have you seen that Tom Brady relentless. Commercial where it's just him saying let's go in different ways? And the first like four are like, oh, let's go. And the last one is like, let's go. And it's some like car rental commercial.
Yeah. Let's go is really, it is what an bro culture, right? All the way down to elementary schools is dominated by let's go. But anyway, back to it. Big day for kickers when you get two in the top 112. And I like both picks. I do think it's just interesting. San Francisco would had a one of the best veteran incumbents and used a third round pick on a guy that I guess he'll be better, but you don't know.
And it was a couple episodes that we each announced like our guys in the draft. And I'd already picked Joey Porter. Greg, you took Tajay Spears, and Dan, you took Jake Moody. So your guy, obviously the NFL or at least one NFL team truly felt what you felt. I can't say I love the Niners ability to draft much in this draft with what they had given up already with the Trey Lance deal. The situation going on with Trey Lance is weird. And I don't mind teams. I think the one thing that I find funny about the draft, it's like, oh, you would never draft a kicker. But then it's like 8 out of 10 team seasons go totally on the brink when you get into that flux where you have to go find kickers off the street. So if you go get the next version of Robbie Gould, like the Niners are that much more consistent on offense. So I don't hate the move if it works out, but I'm not. I got to say their draft in general was just there wasn't a lot of ability for them to do much. And it was just kind of a low walk. If you look at the two teams in the NFC title game, like what the Eagles did in this draft and what the Niners were able to do, it's vastly different.
Right.
Eagles, I think it's funny you said that, Mark. Like, go get the next version of Robbie Gould. You literally had Robbie Gould. And I know he's older.
How old is he? Because he's old. He's like, what, 40-something? I mean,
I didn't see a lot of slippage. I don't think he's ever missed a field goal in the playoffs, ever. I mean,
it's a little crazy. The Packers replaced Mason Crosby. That was surprising. Or they're going to try to. That was less surprising. That was a sixth-round pick. The Patriots drafted a kicker, as you mentioned. They traded up. They have taken some kickers high. They took Gostkowski in the fourth round. But they traded up for a kicker. And they still had Nick Folk, who was, you know, doing well, but both Gold and Folk aren't hitting those bombs. And Kyle Shanahan loves himself. He loves setting up for long field goals, surprisingly. Like, you think of him as this aggressive guy, and he loves kicking field goals. But you got to beat out Robbie Gould. I like that the Patriots also drafted a punter. They drafted a kicker and a punter in the same draft.
Robbie Gould's a free agent, Greggy. He was on the Greybeards.
Okay.
So they said we're moving on. I don't know. Maybe there's some more to that story. I have no idea.
Yeah, but, I mean, it wasn't because of decline, but...
Well, he didn't have much range. By the way, the Patriots punter, I saw his picture, and it's hilarious. Like the last punter they drafted was, like, didn't he have like, how do I put this? White supremacy paraphernalia tattooed on his arms. That didn't go well. Kind of short circuited his career. The guy they drafted this time, total opposite. Looks like he's brewing his own beer and like hosts like a horticulture podcast or something like that. I really like this.
So the
gentleman.
Pats replace they reboot the entire booting game. That's cool. All right, Mark, you want to bring some negativity to the proceedings?
Well, I don't want to completely slash the Titans, because I think that Gravedigger talked about the ways that this draft could be looked at positively, except I don't love what happened with first year general manager Rand Carthon. In their post Peter Skoronski presser draft, like, he came out, just let's play this clip, and then I want to say something
Thursday
about
night?
It afterwards. Yeah,
this was actually Friday. This was the day two presser recap after they didn't draft a wide receiver and kind of got grilled for it.
Right.
I just want to say something real quick. You know, today and as yesterday, these kids are living their dreams, right? Having their name called. You know, realizing a dream and being drafted. And I don't want these, you know, interactions between us to always feel like we got to take a negative turn. And, you know, this should be a joyous moment for us to praise these kids. This is a moment these kids are going to see this, you know, and this is a moment for them and their families to rejoice in, you know, because it's only going to happen once, you know.
So it's like, I get it. This is the first time that Carthon's had a, you know, press conference after his first draft. And but there's something about all that that was not received well by some in the room for being a little preachy. Like Paul Kuharsky, who's a friend of the show, and I think I love him as a Titans reporter because he's a little acerbic, a little more cynical. And
wasn't he an enemy of the show? He wanted to take down Dan.
He was critical of the Titans moniker, but he's a little bit brassy and he's a little different than other reporters, and that's okay.
Yeah, but peace was bridged during our time with him, if I recall. And he said, if your confidence in the Titans is low, Mike Vrabel, who usually does well to restore such things, didn't do a lot to reinforce it in that press conference, and Rand Carthon gave some really poor answers. And then his second tweet, which was sort of a response to being preached at, was, I'm not in kindergarten. If you draft a guy with a reputation for bad QB decision-making, I'll be asking about it. You may have heard it's a soft media market. It's not going to be what you ask. Sorry, Titans. We'll see how this plays out, but there was something about the Titans draft and their overall, like, years long, including the trade of AJ Brown, to just sort of ignore the wide receiver position that I think is driving certain reporters crazy, driving certain fans crazy. You're hanging on to the idea that you drafted Colton Dowell in the 7th round as the only addition at wide receiver. It was a major issue last year. That team completely nosedived and vanished offensively down the stretch. And now you have Will Levis and Ryan Tannehill facing the same situation going into this season. And you're floating answers out there like, hey, we're a little smarter than you. Let's celebrate the players we picked. And please, no critical questions. Don't love it.
I know where you're coming from on that. I thought maybe, although he wasn't sparring or challenging the reporters, it came off as a touch condescending. And like, one of the reasons I got into journalism and what I loved about it and love about it is that the reporter's job on some level, from my perspective, is to kind of be the voice of the fans and to be the ones that ask sometimes the hard questions. And while I understand what Carthon is saying there, I also think to myself, yeah, there are a lot of Titans fans that are like, hey, man, we need to get a little more explosive. You traded away AJ Brown. We need to kind of start building. And that question has to be asked. And it might be in conflict with your idea that we should be celebrating these kids entering the league. I think there's room for that. But you can't tell another person in that room how they should be doing their job. You know, they're in two different positions. So I also don't think the Carthon should be killed over it. But that's not a great way to get your relationship going. Also, I don't know if Kuharsky speaks only for himself or if this is more of a big issue or a bigger issue that's brewing behind the scenes over there, but we'll see.
I mean, his tweet was pretty condescending and like, look at me too. So it was a little back and forth. It's like, oh, you heard it's a soft market. The guys who are on the radio.
I kind of liked it, I got to say.
Right, I like it too. I kind of like both is just how I would say. Like, I respect Carthon kind of bringing that perspective and he can speak on it if that's what he wants to. And I respect Kuharsky coming back and I think that's healthy. But there's always one guy on the radio in the town. It's like, hey, you might not like it, but I'm going to tell it like it is. And usually that guy is kind of a jackass.
I mean, I'm with you, Dragon. Like, I'm not trying to come out of this like flaming Carthon, because I think like there's a reason they picked him and time will tell if he's successful. It's just like, I think it's important in 2023 and beyond to kind of nail these press conferences. Like, you just don't want to come out with these talking points. And there seemed to be an apprehension to kind of answer the tough question around what is your plan with wide receiver and et cetera. It's like, you're going to have to face those. If you're not going to go do what the fans want, you're going to have to face the questions.
Fair enough. I think that was, Greg is, and you know, the New England media market's no walk in the park, but that's like the type of questions. I think one of the things Carsey's getting at that, maybe in a New York market or a bigger market, like, you're going to get. Yeah. And maybe he's saying in Nashville in Tennessee, maybe that's not the type of line of questioning Carthon's expecting. But, you know, Maurice Carthon, Rand's father, he knows that what it's like to play in a big market. I'm sure they'll work things out.
I'm looking forward that's how to we this, get, we get this Paul, budding relationship.
Yeah, we get Paul and Ran together for a burger and a beer, and we'll just sort it out.
Sign me up.
All right. You got something else, Greggy?
Yeah. I mean, are we wrapping up here? I could do a lot of quick hitters.
Why don't we got a bunch of little things too. We want to go a little more
Yeah, let's do some things I enjoyed. We mentioned it a little bit on Thursday. I like the Bears meat and potato draft. It was what they had to do. It wasn't flashy. I think they got bigger. They got tougher. I love the Michael Mayer pick to the Raiders. That was nice. I wasn't in love with Tyree Wilson, but Josh McDaniels, that's good. Jonathan Mingo was kind of my guy, at least at wide receiver in this draft, and you paired him with Bryce Young. So that's another thing to be excited about in terms of the offense in Carolina. And then I like the college connections. Jake Haener, drafted by the Saints, Fresno State guy, like Derek Carr. They already had a relationship. They're already talking. He wants to be his mentor. And then Stetson Bennett, the Georgia national champion who just won a title in SoFi Stadium with Les Snead watching, is now the next Rams backup quarterback. And I know he's the backup because there's no other quarterbacks on the roster. And they're both Georgia guys, Stetson Bennett and Matthew Stafford. So I like the synchronicity there.
Here's a connection to that. Because I have it labeled under weirdest tweet of the draft from ESPN's Diana Rossini. Well, here's the tweet. I'm just going to read it. It was never a big secret that the Rams loved QB Stetson Bennett, but they played this out really well. I was told how important it was to get a QB in that room who wouldn't be a problem or cause issues. What?
Early. There was a run on kind of surprising quarterback prospects, or like, so they took him very early. Everyone knew they liked him apparently, so they had to take him early. And I don't know about the problems thing. I mean, he did just have like a DUI. So I guess they're saying like a guy that wouldn't like want the starting job right away, and he'll know his place because he's friends
what
with
mid-round
Matthew Stafford.
Quarterback.
Right. Oh, exactly. So I don't know.
Oh, I'm so trying to. All right. I think that maybe is that what it means, Mark? That if you took a high, not that they could even take a high draft pick this year, but if you brought in like some, you know, playboy from the college game, it would tear apart the locker. I don't know.
I guess. I mean, I think like, because I thought the experience with Baker Mayfield, if anything, was perceived to be positive. And we all thought that like he and McVay got along well. But I guess if you had stuck with Baker Mayfield, you're going to get a couple quotes over the course of an offseason where he's telling you he wants to be the starter. I don't know. I mean, I don't know why anyone.
I think it was that Stafford and him were kind of buddies, which is like, okay, great.
Yeah. Cool. Well, you got another nug there, Greg?
I got it. I mean, this should have been front and center. Big winners. We got history being made. Riley Moss, cornerback. Where was he from? Iowa. Now I forget. To Denver. He's going to be the first white cornerback to be playing regular snaps since Jason Sehorn. It's been a long time here. He's breaking barriers.
He's the guy Zerline was talking up, right?
He's breaking barriers. Went in the third round. A lot of people really liked him. And so, yeah, shout out to Riley Moss for just changing. You know, we talked about body diversity that I'm in favor of. We just need all sorts of different types. It's insane. It's absolutely crazy that's true, that there hasn't been one since Jason Sehorn.
How about our short king, Deuce Vaughn? 5'5".
Yeah.
He goes at round 6, pick 35, to the Dallas Cowboys. That's actually, Marky, a nice little spot, I think, for our short king, who enters the fray with Zeke out of the picture, with Tony Pollard coming off a major leg injury. They signed Ronald Jones in free agency, but come on, it's Ronald Jones. They also have Malik Davis, who is just a guy. So our short king has a chance to do some things at 5'5", 179, and coming off back-to-back 1K seasons and All-America honors.
I love the idea of it. And, you know, we work with a short king in MJD. I don't think he'd have a problem with me calling him that. He didn't.
I'm right here, Mark. I'm right here.
Yeah, but you're not a former NFL running back. I'm talking about an actual someone who's doing what this person
You know what's over my shoulder right now? It's very small. Really not befitting, you know, the honor. Division I state champions.
I agree with your body diversity, but I don't think like one of the NFL teams is looking to bring in like an ex high school tennis player at this point. I just don't think so.
I'm the short king of the podcasting game. They've never had such a short podcaster out there.
I don't want to demean that trophy, Greg, but first of all, it's impossibly small for the achievement. And also it was a team tennis title. It wasn't a singles championship, I think we had established. No disrespect.
Absolutely, but I went undefeated, you know, that season starting. You know, team tennis is three people basically. The three of us rolled. I'm not taking any grief.
Oh, we need like a, if we had the rights, we just roll in Springsteen's glory days right now. Mark, you got some stuff?
You know, I'm not going to go down Winners and Losers Boulevard, but I liked what the Bucks did in general. Like, I except for not addressing quarterback, which is weird, but they sit out there as a team that might go do that next offseason in a big way. But Cody Mauch, like the offensive tackle out of North Dakota State, is a wildly immense, giant, amazing human who I think is going to be an interesting fit down in super hot Tampa Bay. And Kalijah Kancey as well. Yaya Diaby, this guy, or Diaby, this like edge guy that they got, helps because Shaq Barrett's coming off an Achilles. So I think this was a sign that the Bucks aren't like, they're reloading on defense a little bit. They got a tough offensive lineman. I kind of like the mood of what the Bucks are doing right now, minus the quarterback situation, because I, as much as I am pro Baker Mayfield, I don't see that going perfectly well.
It's a good job too, because I think the Bucks might be ranked 30th, 31st, 32nd in times mentioned over the last 3 months on this podcast. So that's a good job by you.
I'll throw one out there. I think, although I haven't been on board with what I have perceived to be a premature push for the Atlanta Falcons the last 2 years, I do believe they are on a compelling path as we look ahead to 2023. Still wish, yes, that they address quarterback in a different way. Ryan Tannehill still available. Hey, heads up. But I also I respect Falcons fans for what they've gone through over the last 5 or 6 years. I'll never forget being at that Super Bowl in Houston, I believe it was, and we all walked by this kind of rundown hotel on the outskirts of town that was completely booked out with Atlanta football fans partying, having the time of their life on Saturday night. And thinking to myself, A, I hope my fan base gets to do this just once before I die. And B, God, that's the first group of people I thought about when 28-3 went down. Mm. Falcons fans are so sick of 28-3. And the only thing that's made 28-3 worse has been the fact that the team has not really been relevant or compelling really ever since. I know they won a playoff game the next year. We were there against the Rams. But other than that, it's been really a downhill ride here. Listen to this. Super fan. I wish I had his name. If we could get it, that would be awesome, Justin. But if not, don't worry about it. Announcing a pick and then hearing someone shout from the crowd, you know what they shouted.
With the 224th pick in the 2023 NFL Draft,
this guy's going to introduce the Wingate
Punter. The Atlanta Falcons select DeMarco Helms.
No.
Defensive back, Alabama. 28-3, good one. We've heard that before.
Oh! I'm assuming that came from the New England section down in the orchestra pit.
Absolutely.
Yes, I'm so glad we got that on film.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah, a little point and a mocking. Yeah, we've heard that one before. Falcons fans don't want to hear that. It's time for them to build their next cycle of success so they can really move on from that horrific Sunday.
That if you beautiful. if you aren't watching this on YouTube, go find that clip either on this episode or somewhere else, because the what he's wearing there is one of the more like it completely combats my concept of male fashion being in a low place at the moment. He is doing something completely different with his choices. And it was an eye popper, and I think it gave that production a little life at that point, because that was like deep in the seventh round where, you know, you're just struggling for something to say, and like out comes this eye-catching wonder.
It's a red suit with the dirty bird all over it. And he was holding a championship.
You should
belt.
Watch this YouTube, you know? Hit the like, subscribe to Around the NFL
Smash
podcast
it,
on
even.
YouTube. Smash that like. Check out the live stream from the other night. It's still cranking.
Does anybody have one more? I have one more, but I'll defer to some you guys if you have one.
Yeah, quickly. Danny Kelly pointed out Devin Achane during our running back preview, and I wasn't familiar with him at the time, but he compared him to the running back version of Tyreek Hill. His explosiveness is insane. When I went to watch him, he is an insane player, and now he's a member of the Dolphins. That's the fastest track team I've ever seen, and so I'm just excited about that. Him and Mostert in the same backfield, just like he is pure speed. And then my last winner of the night, you got to give it to the guys overseas, our buds, both Neil Reynolds and Will Gavin, Neil of Sky Sports, Will Gavin of Talk Sport Radio, both introducing picks on day three, coming through big in a big spot. They were sort of introducing young fans in the UK that actually said the pick, but they were there. They got their moment in the sun. They got some nice NFL Network pop. So good job by Will and Neil.
Both
I
top just, blokes.
I needed one of them to be in holographic form because I lost, as far as I can tell.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, I don't know if I tracked every pick, but it's not looking good for the non-human making a pick.
Yeah, we will get to that. Mark, you got something else?
I mean, I know we talked a little Patriots, but I thought in general I liked their draft, and I think a winner has to be Mac Jones because I had become more and more convinced that he was going to get shipped out of town, that they were maybe going to go quarterback in general. They hung out there on the fringe of the potential Lamar Jackson chase, and then a week later, there's really no competition outside of Bailey Zappi for Mac Jones's job. He's a star. I think he's the presumptive starter. I don't think he and Belichick are like the best of friends, but I don't think Bill Belichick's ever really been the best of friends with almost any of his quarterbacks. And so it's like you got Bill O'Brien. It's a better situation than a year ago, and you haven't just been thrown somewhere else to start all over in another city.
Keon White, their second round pick, quickly was as upset as I've ever seen. I really felt for him when he got drafted number 46. I believe he was at the draft and he left because he was disappointed, and they did still have a camera on him when he got drafted in the second round. I've never seen a player look as pissed off. He was not getting over it in the moment. So Keon White, a lot of people thought he'd be a top 30 pick. I hope he brings that energy and he takes it out on the rest of the league.
Very nice. Very nice. I wanted the ultimate winner. This is my last one. I mean, no one won the draft in Kansas City at a higher level than Hollywood actor Eric Stonestreet, the Modern Family star, loyal to the soil, as they say, all over the coverage on NFL Network and beyond. It's Stonestreet mania. Here he is announcing the Chiefs pick late in the draft.
All right, Kansas City!
Hey!
Yes. Hey, real quick. I'm so proud of our hometown. You guys showed up and showed the National Football League what a great welcoming city Kansas City is. So thank you, Kansas City. We love all NFL fans. We love everyone. We love football.
Hey, man. When you have an opportunity to just own the moment, as Stonestreet has this weekend, You grab it. You grab that rocket and you go for a ride. And Stonestreet hopped on and he soared across the skies of Missouri.
All three
and
days. I mean, he wasn't just like a Thursday night guy or a Friday night guy.
Hell no.
He was in all 3 days. And I've learned since, like, he has beefs with different reporters around the country. Jeff Howe of The Athletic, who was once covering the Patriots, he has a beef with Stonestreet because he once talked a lot of trash about one of his articles. So it's like Stonestreet's in the mix and he's not going away.
Did you see what he was doing outside of the announcement there? He had Rich Eisen in the passenger seat of his car, and he's got a vehicle with one of these like massive like speakers outside of it. And he's
of course
just driving
he does.
Around. Yeah, well, he's driving around being like, "Hey, I'm Rich Eisen." He's pretending to be Rich Eisen and saying sort of like bizarre stuff to people on the side of the street. Like, he's feeling himself.
Do you know what they call that? CS. Classic Stonestreet.
That is. It is.
We love football. Sounds like it could be the slogan for next year's season. Just we love football.
Put that in the chamber. We might be firing that one off come next September. All right. Before we say goodbye, let's check in on Go Get My Lunch once again. Nick Fortier.
Oof. This was my worst one ever, I think.
By the way, Nick Fortier reached out to me. You were concerned, Greg, that perhaps he was disrespected earlier last week, that I couldn't quite place his name. But he took it in great spirits and signed a message to me, Nick Fortier, a.k.a. Ryan Frontier, a.k.a. Chad Foster.
Chad Foster.
Which is just funny. Chad Foster. But yeah, you took a bit of a dirt nap here, Greggy. Will you finish under 500. So Tyree Wilson is the first defensive player taken in the draft. No, he was not. It was who? Will Anderson?
Yeah, Will Anderson.
Dan and Mark pick up sandwiches there. Then you had all four of the top QBs. Young, Stroud, Levis, and Richardson are drafted within the top 10. Almost, but unfortunately, Levis fell out of the first round and was taken 32nd overall. So he did not get that. Two more sandwiches for Dan and Mark. And then you had D-Hops. We all got banged on the veterans being moved. You had D-Hops traded to the Bills by the end of the draft. Two more losses there. So you finished 5-8. Mark Sessler, hey, man, listen, we talked about it. You're deep in the rear view in the standings. You just got to chop wood for a few years. That's it. And okay. Here's a perfect example.
You have the perfect jacket for it. I feel like that's a good chopping wood jacket.
Sure.
When Mark is wearing the faded black Levi's jacket on a Saturday, look out. Mark went 7-5. The Packers draft at least four wide receivers and tight ends. Big W. Only one sandwich, though, you know, because I found it to be
egregious.
Nebulos. Mac Jones is not a Patriot by the end of the draft. There's your ding there. Dan and Greg took you on that, and Mac Jones is very much, it appears, part of the equation there. A non-human / non-animal makes a draft pick. Dan and Greg both pick up sandwiches there. Was there ever a moment? I saw at one point there were, what the hell was it? I turned it on today, and it was monkeys or puppies or something. There was some type of animal.
A dog peed on Daniel Jeremiah. Speaking of a winner in this draft, that dog is a winner. They brought
good boy.
A dog on stage.
Oh, this is a good boy.
Yeah, he peed on DJ, so that's good. That sounded nice. Like something Mark would have predicted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should have. I didn't sense that when I was cooking up my sandwich things, but I'll be fully accountable. I did not track every single day three announcement. I like to watch as much as I can, but other human things were occurring during the day. But I know that if a non-human, non-animal had made a pick, I would be getting tons of tweets from people. And it was essentially totally quiet. So very confident that a non-human, non-animal was not a participant today.
The old Zeus are 8-4. Oh, opening up a bit of a lead on the old boss. The Texans stay at number two and draft a QB. Pick up two sandwiches there with CJ Stroud coming off the board at two. I just missed really cleaning up in this draft because I had the Jets select Broderick Jones in the first round. And another Schrager report that was out there, he was saying on Friday that the Jets weren't happy with the quote unquote narrative. That everyone thought that that's who they wanted when that not necessarily was the case. I don't know if I necessarily believe that, but the Jets were pushing back against that. They ended up taking the edge rusher. So I missed that one, though. So it cost me two sandwiches. And then I had, once again, we all got dinged with the trades. Titans trade either Tannehill or Henry by today. So I guess they still have a till midnight. For that, but I don't see it happening, so that's going to cost me too. And then finally, the curse of the producer continues. Justin had no trades within the top seven picks, and as we said before, this was a historic draft. There was more trades than ever, 41, I believe, or in the 40s somewhere. You had none in the top seven, and I believe there were two in the top seven. So,
yeah, since you got that doubly wrong, you have to get us two sandwiches each.
Okay, well, one day I will win a sandwich. Watch. One day.
How did it go Thursday night after that long day? And again, thank you to Justin and everybody behind the scenes, including Jessica as well, your lovely girlfriend who sat in on the live stream. When you got home, was she happy about being a part of it? Or was she like, what was that all about? Like, where did she come down on the live stream ultimately?
A little bit of both. She was happy to be there. She was happy to see it all like happening live and not having to watch it, you know, on YouTube at home waiting for me to get back from work. But at the same time, she did feel like, why was it a million degrees in that room? Why didn't you and Mark get more picks right in your mock draft so I had something to do instead of just sitting there waiting for you guys to be wrong all night? So yeah, that's where she came down.
I think it's a fair, a totally fair assessment.
By the way, I have some reporting I want to share about the temperature in that room. And this is something that I... you know, I like the triple source. So I did, I heard it. Someone volunteered it to me, and then I checked in with a couple other people on this. And it has now been confirmed to me that the room where we did the live stream for 5 hours, which was filled with, you know, roughly 8 to 10 people with lighting and cameras all over the place, it was known that there was an issue with the air conditioning weeks ago, and yet we were thrown to the wolves or thrown into the fire, literally, despite them knowing full well what the outcome would have been.
You triple sourced it from within the building. We were, and when I say we, I'm not just talking about the three of us, and we're not just Justin. There was a large crowd of hardworking NFL media employees inside what was a room that was no bigger than a small bedroom, essentially. It was very compact, no windows, no ventilation. And you're trying to tell me that higher ups within the building knew that they were willingly throwing their employees, the people that they value, into this sort of hothouse for 4+ hours. You're telling me that's the scenario?
I can only tell you what my reporting came back with, which is they were fully aware, Greg, that if they put that many people and that much lighting and that much equipment in that room for that amount of time, it was going to be a potentially dangerous experience, especially for the talent. And that's all. And we could take action steps going forward as we head into the off season, the proper off season for us. But I think I had to get that out there. And I know that's going to rub some people the wrong way, some shadowy league figures, that I would bring this reporting out here. But that's part of what the Zeuser has to do in terms of his reporting. Mm. And I'm just, that's it.
Well, you know, Jessica had mixed feelings when Justin returned. Emeka's feelings weren't mixed at all. She saw me and she was like, did you lose 7 pounds of water weight tonight? Because you're looking good when I walked in. She's like, just get those soggy... that soggy underwear out of here, and then, you know, let's go.
Let's go.
The night ended with Greg wringing out his tidy whities into the kitchen sink.
Don't need to visualize that.
All right. I think that's enough. good stuff. Good stuff. Another draft in the books. That is the 10th draft we've covered for this podcast. We've been involved with more drafts, probably about 12 or 13. As a group, but in terms of the Around the NFL podcast, our 10th, and we thank you for listening. Greggy, I know you checked it out. The numbers, very healthy and robust, both with the stream and the podcast. You guys, 10 years into the show now, have continued to support us, and the show has continued to grow. And also, again, Justin, jump back in here. Justin, this kind of is the year anniversary of Justin taking over as our full-time producer, replacing Erica, who obviously was incredible for us. But Justin, that was a hell of a first year with ATN. So we thank you for everything you do.
Thanks. It's been a really fun year. Learned a lot, and looking forward to a year where now I know all the like events and the tentpole things that we're, you know, expecting to cover. So I think I'll be better.
You've done it all once. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We haven't talked about this, but I'm actually ready to ask you to be our pre-fiance producer.
We're pre-engaging?
We're pre-engaged. I don't know how that works. Yeah. I want to pre-engage with you, with Justin.
Imagine us all on our knees. Yes. Well, on one knee. Okay, that seems like a good time to get out. Thank you to everybody. We have around the AFC and NFC with special guests galore this week. So check back in on Tuesday. Until then, Dan Hansen signing off for Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal, Justin Graver, everybody behind the scenes. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.